Welcome back to the second hour of Guitar Tracks. I'm your host, Brian Tarquin. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Jeff Tate from Queensryche. And he's one of my favorite hard rock singers. Great voice, great range. So I asked him what his early influences were and how he got started in music and if he was professionally trained for vocals.
Well, I think probably one of my biggest early influences as far as singing goes would be Tom Jones, the Welsh singer. Yeah, he's a fantastic singer. And I remember watching him on television, actually, sometime, it must have been in the late 60s. And he had like a variety show on at the time. And man, I tell you, that was that show took center stage in my house when I was growing up. we were all Tom Jones fans. You know, he could sing anything. You know, he just has an amazing voice, and he really knows how to use it. You know, he can sing, you know, blues stuff. He can sing classical stuff. He could probably sing a metal song if he wanted to, you know. Still to this day, I saw a video of him on YouTube performing, and he must be in his 80s now, and he sounded incredible. Like I said, he could sing anything, and he really was a major influence when I was growing up as far as singing goes. You know, I didn't have a lot of singing influences so much as I had musical influences, you know? Music caught my ear pretty early when I was growing up. I remember 9 years old, you know, begging my parents to take piano lessons because I wanted to learn music, you know? And I just been drawn to the piano. We had one in our house when I was growing up, and I was just drawn to it from a very early age. And because it's a wonderful instrument to have instant gratification on, because you can hit any note. You know, you don't have to have like a major amount of skill like you do with a guitar to make, you know, notes and to follow a melodic pattern. You can just tap it out on the piano very easily, you know. So I started really early with that. That became probably my major influence, was having the piano in the house. So, you know, I heard music that moved me, and that brought me into discovering about, you know, about the players and who they were and what they could do. Like, for example, the first time I heard Genesis, you know, I was very young. And then I found out, I think I first heard of them in 1975 or something like that, the Lamb Lies Down album. Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. And I was old enough to take a road trip and go see him play live. And I'd never forget it. It was an amazing experience because they were so theatrical and very, very different, you know, and they were English and seemed very exotic. And they put on an amazing kind of like a vaudevillian show, you know, done with their kind of music, you know, and it truly impressed me. With, I guess, one, lighting up my imagination to what the possibilities could be, you know. And already at that time, I was sort of thinking in terms of pursuing music as a major endeavor. And so these influences were really kind of playing out and giving me ideas for, you know, what I could do in the future. Yeah, that was a wonderful group of musicians who really created some really interesting, unique stuff, you know. And then, of course, as all bands do, their chemistry kind of ran its course, and you know, they went other ways, you know. Probably the people I met at the time, the group of people I was playing music with, and just my circle of local influences were really focused on rock music. And it was kind of the music of the times, you know. This is like, we're talking late 70s. Yeah, so, you know, like when I met Chris DeGarmo, who became the guitar player in Queensryche, you know, he was really into the Beatles and Kiss and hard rock bands like the Scorpions and Judas Priest. And he exposed me to these bands, and the hard rock bands at least. And, you know, we found some common ground on things we liked. Other than that, because I was a Beatles fan and he was a Beatles fan, so we found some common ground there. But I think, yeah, mostly it was due to the influences around me locally in my music scene. You know, I took lessons in school growing up. I was in choir and band growing up. And then when I became, I guess, an adult. Are you an adult at 19, 20 years old? Yeah, I started taking, well, I took a series of lessons from a fairly famous vocal teacher in Seattle area, Maestro David Kyle. And he was very influential to me in helping me kind of develop a strong voice and a strong, you know, way of singing. And yeah, he was a fantastic teacher. You know, when you're really lucky when you, as you're growing up and you meet so many people, and a couple of people along the way really do help you and influence you, you know, in a positive way. And especially when it comes to teachers, you know, I can think of probably two teachers growing up that really inspired me. The rest were sort of just doing their job, you know, and didn't have a real dramatic effect on me. But two teachers in general really inspired me to think beyond my normal reality, you know, and sort of look to what the possibilities could be.
You know, we had a discussion about that. You are a very lucky person as a musician if you had just one teacher that really motivated you in life. He went on to tell me about Queensryche and how it was formed and how they all met.
We kind of knew each other because the scene here in Seattle at that time was really small. And there were only two places in town you could play original music. The rest wouldn't hire you or wouldn't let you play. They just wanted bands to play cover music, you know, so people could dance and drink and, you know, that kind of thing. So we all kind of met through that scene of playing at these two different venues in the area. And we knew of each other. We all played in different bands. And we all kind of went to the same parties and, you know, jam sessions and that kind of thing. One day I was in my house and just lounging around, and I got a knock at the door, and it was Chris DeGarmo, and he had a little demo tape, cassette tape. He said, "Look, me and some guys I've been jamming with, we made this demo tape, and we wondered if you would be interested in singing on it." And I said, "Well, I would be. Leave me the tape." And I kind of listened to it for a few days, and I called him up. I said, "Yeah, I'm interested in doing it," and that sort of formed our relationship with writing. You know, before that, we had known each other because the five of us all played in a cover band called The Mob, and we played these kind of hard rock venues in the city here, and we only played like maybe 6 or 7 times, I guess, live. Yeah, we were a cover band before we started Queensryche, called The Mob. And then after we recorded the demo tape and decided to put out our own album, our EP, as it was called, we came up with the name Queensryche because somebody already had The Mob as a name. We couldn't use it. Well, there wasn't a thing called progressive rock. That was a term that was coined much later. We were just writing what was interesting to us, and that was sort of the route we always took. You know, was if it moved us as a group, you know, that's what we did.
That's what a real true band does: go by their gut and go by their instinct and play music that really motivates them. I had to ask him about the Queensryche 2009 album American Soldier and the concept.
Kind of an interesting story. I was in Oklahoma and I was visiting my dad. And we were sitting out on his back porch, and it was really hot out. We were having like a pitcher of iced tea. And he starts telling me about Korea in the 1950s when he was fighting in the war. He has never in my life talked about this. He's never talked about Korea, or he also fought in Vietnam. He's never told me stories about it, never mentioned it. But all of a sudden on this day, he's just talking up a storm about it all, right? So I take out my phone and I hit the record button and I record the whole story conversation, which was fascinating to me because I never knew this part of him, you know. And a couple of days later, I was back home and I played the tape for my wife, and she said, "Man, you know, you got to do an album about this. This is dramatic stuff. And I had been kind of toying around with doing another kind of conceptual record at the time. And so her suggestion really hit home with me. And so I called my dad up and I went down and visited him again and did some formal recordings of him telling me some of the stories, which ended up being used on the album. His voice is on there telling some of the stories. But some of it is my father, and some of it is other soldiers that I interviewed for the album. But his initial storytelling of his experiences are what led me to the record, really. Man, what a trip it was. It started out with a conversation with my dad and ended up me interviewing like 300 different soldiers, telling me their stories of their experiences in different wars, spanning from World War II up to, I think, the Somalia was included in that. And also, it led to the band going to Iraq and playing 3 weeks of shows throughout the country for the soldiers. It was a wild trip of something that I never expected, you know, would come from that, you know. But it was kind of a life-changing experience for me. You know, one, I really got to know my dad a lot in a way that I'd never known him. And I also had my world opened up to experiences from all these different people from different backgrounds in life, all sharing their same experience or similar experiences that they had in war. And I found the whole thing to be an incredible experience, and I cherish it. We went to 8 different bases. 2 of them were under attack when we showed up, which was incredibly frightening. I'd never been in a situation like that, I never want to do it again. I'm not built for that, you know. It was interesting in a lot of ways, that lifestyle that soldiers lead. Not something that I would want to be doing in my life, but I'm glad I got to experience it somewhat from their perspective, you know, because we hung out with soldiers every day. We did what soldiers do. They gave us training in different fields. Like we learned how to, you know, dismantle explosives. We learned how to attach explosives to large objects and blow them up. Oh yeah, they put us in training. We learned how to roll a Humvee and get back on 4 wheels again. And wow, it was. I got to fly in a Black Hawk helicopter, which was life changing. Yeah, it was an incredible experience. Yeah, it was Eddie and Scott, myself, and Michael Wilton. Then our replacement guitar player for Chris, I can't remember who did it. I think it was Parker Lundgren at the time.
I love the fact that the band had to go through basic training on explosives and Humvees. Now he tells me about who's playing with him at the King's Center tomorrow night, February 27th, and how touring was during the pandemic lockdown.
We're doing what's called the Big Rock Show, which is really interesting set list of all the songs I ever made as a video or a single. It's pretty comprehensive. It covers almost all of my records, you know, almost. except the solo stuff. I'm not doing any of that yet. I'm doing a separate show for that at some point. I have a wonderful group of musicians. Some of them have been playing with me for, I think the Jack Ross on bass is my longest musician that's been with me now since, I think, 2016. I have Jack on bass, James Brown on guitar, Omri Altmaier on guitar, Danny Laverde on drums and percussion. And then I have Dario Parente also on guitar, and Bruno Safiera on keyboards. I am incredibly fortunate and have developed audiences in different places in the world. So we travel a lot internationally. And so different countries were in different states of experiencing the pandemic. And so we managed to go to where you could tour still, you know, or you could travel freely in the world and play our shows there and bring our concerts there. And then as the country slowly opened up, you know, we would expand and go to that country and tour, you know. I think there was only maybe 3 months of downtime where we actually had to sit in one place, you know. And we chose Ireland. My wife and I, and we went to Ireland for 3 months and hung out there. And then later, it kind of closed down and became very restrictive after we left. And by that time, different places in America were opening up. So we did do a show, I remember, at Clearwater in Florida. And I think we played Ruth Eckert Hall, but they would only allow 300 people into the venue. And so that's a pretty big place. And you see 300 people and they're all spread out because they won't let people sit next to each other at the time, you know. And it was very strange to do a show like that. And especially because all the people were wearing masks at the time. And we had our light guy turn the lights on to the audience so we could see them, because they were just, it seemed like you were playing to an empty room because there were so few people there, you know. Well, I remember at one point, my wife and I, as we were traveling, I think we were going to France at the time, we were sitting on a giant 747 airplane, and there were more crew people on the flight than there were passengers, you know. There was like 14 crew people and, you know, 12 passengers on this whole 747, you know?
It's incredible how the pandemic affected so many people, especially touring acts. And now he goes on to tell me a very interesting business he started. It's called Backstage Pass Travel with Jeff Tate.
My wife and I started this crazy business several years ago called Backstage Pass Travel, where we take groups of people to various places in the world for a week and expose them to all the wonderful things that are available that we've discovered along our way. And we're staying in this old castle in the Dordogne in France, and we have a private chef that cooks our meals every day, and we go out sightseeing and wine tasting. We go to, we have music every night in the castle with myself and other musicians that join me for this. And it's a very special week. And we do these different tours in France and Italy, Tuscany, Ireland. We did one in Montana in the winter, which was stunning in all the snow. And yeah, it's really a kind of a fun thing to do, actually. And we usually locate it around a show, you know, where I'm playing a show. So the people get to have backstage passes and come up on the stage. And that's called Backstage Pass Travel. We've really expanded it. And because people like to go to different places, you know, and we go to 36 countries in the world regularly, you know, every year. So we thought, well, it'd be kind of fun to let people tag along with us and experience some of the things we experienced, especially if you haven't ever been out of the country or traveled much. It's great to go with a group of people who have been there before and know where to go and know what to see and kind of steer you clear of the pitfalls that can happen. And especially with the travel arrangements, that's a huge problem for a lot of people, you know. And the, you know, with the airlines, my God, that's one of the industries that really hasn't quite got back to normal from the pandemic times. There's so many flight cancellations nowadays. I mean, we spend a lot of time flying, and I can't tell you, almost every trip there's an issue with having to reschedule the flight. They canceled the flight and they have to change it to something else, and that makes you miss your connection, and of course that changes everything, you know. And luckily we haven't missed any shows, but it's been close a few times.
Well, I can't think of a better way to see the world than with Jeff Tate. He's seen it a few times. Now I'm going to play a track from the 2006 Queensryche album American Soldier. It's called Silver.
On your feet! Hey! I'm gonna tell you what's up!
good cause. Then I heard a Dr. X, the man with the cure. Just watch the television, yeah, you'll see there's something going on. Got no love for politicians. All that crazy scene in D.C., it's just a power mad town. But the time is right for changes. There's a growing feeling they're taking a chance on.
Hi, this is Jeff Tate, and you're listening to Guitar Tracks on WFIT.
There's a lot being said. A lot being talked about. Now this is real. This is me. This is me. This is me.
Throwing the beat. looking over the shoulder. This ain't like Australia.
The way I roll.
That's the way Jeff rolls. That's Jeff Tate from his 2012 album, Kings and Thieves. Before that was one of the all-time great albums by Queensryche, Operation Mindcrime, Revolution Calling.